Maundy Thursday has, in the lectionary at least, the same gospel reading every single year. And you might think that a preacher would get bored talking about the same thing every single year, but not in this case. Because in this very gospel reading, we've got the meal that they share, and if you do the that second reading we did from Corinthians, you've got communion, right? Holy communion. Technically, the meal they had in John's gospel is not really communion in that way. It was just supper and they had foot washing in the middle. But you can talk about communion. We have First Communion here, like many, 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 many churches do on Maundy Thursday. So we can talk about communion. You can talk about the Maundy, which is the word Maundy comes from mandatum, the Latin word that means commandment, as in the new commandment that I give you to love one another. I could talk about that in every sermon, every week, until every church fired me. I would never get tired of it. That's how much I like that one. So we'll come back around to that one. But tonight, because we're going to try this foot washing situation, I'm going to talk about that, because that also is right here in this story. Now, I once got yelled at for a sermon I preached on Maundy Thursday. It was on my internship, and my supervisor yelled at me about it. And the situation was that I started that sermon off with a little joke about how I like to preach about foot washing on Maundy Thursday, but we're not doing foot washing there, so I guess I can't preach about it. Got to come up with something else. I thought that was a harmless joke. She did not take it that way. It's always fun when your boss yells at you. Between church, again, then again, we also had morning and evening, so between the services, I got to come up with a new joke to start off the sermon, right? I don't know. It was fine. I didn't think it was that big a deal. I had grown up with foot washing being a normal thing. I'd been at churches where that was a normal thing. I wasn't used to this, people thinking it was odd or unusual. I gather since that foot washing can be a bit divisive for folks. Some people have never heard of it, except it's like a weird thing that happened in the Bible. Like a million weird things happen in the Bible. Why would we do this one? Well, Jesus does say to do it, but whatever. It's not a sacrament. Who cares, right? Whereas for other people, foot washing is totally normal. But even today. This morning, came in, had church here at 10 o'clock. There was less people, so it was a good run-through for this one. Some people are at both, so they can give an opinion about what was the same and what was different, what was better and what was worse. But this morning, I had my son with me, 7 years old, because after that, I had to take him to my parents so he could be gone. What kind of school has a two-pastor couple like me and my wife and has their kids off school for Maundy Thursday and Good Friday? Rude. What are we supposed to do with our kid, right? So I got him to my parents' house after church. He luckily demonstrated the foot washing, very normal and cool for him, so that was very helpful. But even at lunch, I was telling my parents, oh yeah, we did foot washing. This church has never done it. Well, they've never done foot washing. How strange. And then they admitted that they, in fact, had never had their feet washed. Because just because you have it at a church doesn't mean you actually go up and do it. Well, that's fine. Like, that's totally normal. That's how this works. Now, some churches do foot washing on Maundy Thursday every year. Some churches, I don't know how this practice goes now, but some churches do foot washing every time they have communion, like this story in John. Now, those churches generally do communion 4 times a year or less. So, you know, it's not that big a deal, but my wife grew up in such a church in the Mennonite tradition. So she really likes the foot washing as well. Right? The idea with this foot washing business, right, is it's a strong, powerful symbol of Jesus' servanthood and of our servanthood as followers of Jesus. But just to be clear, foot washing is weird. Like, it's obviously, transparently weird. There was never a time it wasn't weird. It's always been weird. As we'll see, it was weirder in the story in the Bible than it even is for us now. I mean, who touches your feet, right? Like, your doctor, maybe? Like, did anybody actually get pedicures? There's a lot of jokes going around here about people getting pedicures so they could have their feet washed. No, I don't know. If you did, go ahead. I don't get pedicures. Nobody's touching my feet. I don't even get a massage. I don't like people touching me at all, right? You couldn't pay me enough to get a massage. Gross. Get your hands off me. Yuck. Not into it. I don't like people touching me. This is my, everybody has their own preferences for their own bodies. And that is to be respected and honored, and that's cool. No foot washing without consent, at the very, very least. Ugh, gross. So, no, it's not a normal thing. And I understand that. But the trick about foot washing is, of course, that it is supposed to be weird. It's supposed to be awkward. It's ultimately a thing that's supposed to make you feel vulnerable, both the person washing the feet and the person getting their feet washed. It's supposed to make you feel vulnerable. It's a little bit more intimate than you're comfortable with, right? Foot washing is supposed to be this way. This vulnerability, this intimacy, can give us an experience of holiness. That's the idea here. Some people don't like their feet. Some people don't like any feet. Imagine, so go back to the actual story here, right? Why did Jesus wash the disciples' feet? He did that because in his time, people didn't have no socks or fancy shoes or modern medicine or anything. People's feet were gross in their little sandals, right? And so rich people would go to a place, and you, when you walked into somebody's house, you probably took your shoes off, your gross feet are walking around. In a rich people place, the rich people would have their feet washed so they could walk around in somebody else's house. And of course, the servants washed the rich people's feet. Ain't nobody washing these poor disciples' fishermen's feet. Can you imagine the boat foot? Right? Their feet were gross. Like, objectively gross. And that's why when Jesus did this, they were shocked. And in the middle of supper, by the way, what? Right? And that's why Peter spoke up and said, Jesus, what are you doing? You're not washing my feet. Absolutely not. That is not how this works, Jesus. And as usual, you know, it's great of Peter to stand up for what he believes in, and it's, unfortunately, Jesus likes to tell him how it really is. He said, no, I will be doing that. And then Jesus explains it, right? Like, you call me teacher, you call me Lord, and I am those things. And yet, I'm doing this to set an example for you, so that when I'm gone, and they had not yet accepted in their minds that Jesus was gone, but he knew very well what was going on. He knew what night it was. Right? He said, when I'm gone, you have this example. You will remember. Someday you will understand what I'm doing right now. That even if you become the leaders of this movement, the leaders of this church, I didn't even have the word church yet. Even when that happens, you need to remember this, that you need to be humble. This is not about you. This is not about you being rich. This is not about you being powerful. This is not about you getting your feet washed because now you're the big boss man of the church. You need to serve. That's what leadership looks like in the church. And so Jesus gave the most on-the-nose example possible in this foot washing. The most physical, tangible, direct, specific, you can't miss it and you'll never forget it, and it made it into the book example that Jesus gave. But that's what leadership looks like, is serving other people, even in ways that you would never expect to serve. So, that's why Jesus washed the disciples' feet. It made them feel vulnerable. It was more intimate than they wanted. It was not what they were looking for. But they'd let him do it, right? They acquiesced. They agreed. Okay, fine, Jesus, go ahead. They showed him some of the ugliest parts of themselves. I mean, physically, it's sort of a metaphor, but you know. Their actual feet, calluses and dirt and grime and whatever else. Jesus washed their feet. Jesus loved them. He loved them no matter how dirty their feet. He even washed Judas's feet. This reading has a gap in it, and in that gap, Judas leaves to go betray Jesus. Jesus washed Judas's feet, knew exactly what was going on. He shared dinner with him, and he washed his feet. And then Jesus had told Judas to go and do quickly what you're going to do. There again, the other disciples didn't understand, but later they recognized the power of not just loving your friends and not just loving those who are loyal to you, but even loving those who are about to betray you. That's the kind of love that Jesus showed. No matter how dirty their feet, no matter how tortured a metaphor of dirty feet can get of what's wrong with somebody, Jesus loved them exactly as they were, flaws and all, and he served them. And by making themselves vulnerable and putting themselves literally in Jesus' hands, the disciples experienced God's love for them. In effect, Jesus was saying, "Give me the worst part of you, and I will make you clean. I will find the beauty in you. I will give you new life," Jesus said. In this act. Now, At best, this is a little tangent, I think, but at best, the church would be a place, a community, a group of people in which we could be vulnerable, in which we could have the hard conversations, in which we could share the parts of ourselves that maybe we're not proud of, and receive forgiveness, and receive encouragement, and receive love, right? At our best. No, I've never seen a church like this, and I don't think there's a lot of churches like that, where you can really come and bring the worst of you, right? And still be accepted and loved and given another chance and supported with what you need. At its best, that's what a church would be, right? Imagine if the church was the place we came to answer our toughest questions. Imagine if the church was a place where we could have the hardest conversations with people about things that were personal and things that were political and things that were everything else. Imagine if the church were the place where we dared to be vulnerable because we really could trust that this community loves and accepts us exactly as we are. Again, I haven't seen the church do it yet, and I'm not expecting to this side of heaven. But it's a beautiful dream. And again, this experience of foot washing is an experience of vulnerability, of allowing something unusual, allowing a form of love, a form of care, a form of service that you may not normally be used to. Now, Jesus was not finished with his disciples. We'll get to the second part that I love even more of this story, when he said, "I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." I've talked before in this church and in other churches about how difficult it can be to truly love one another. Certainly difficult to like one another from time to time. You've all been in a family. You've all been around other people. You know how hard it can be to love one another. But the real trick about loving one another, and what ties this back to the foot washing, is truly loving another person makes us vulnerable. It's the people closest to us that can hurt us the most, whether intentionally or completely by accident, right? It's the loss of those closest to us that hurt more than anything. It's the betrayal of those closest to us, like Judas with Jesus, that hurt, right? When we love one another, we make ourselves vulnerable. This morning it popped into my head and I just remembered it, so I'll say it again. It's like the Paul Simon song, "I'm a rock, I'm an island, and a rock feels no pain and an island never cries." The idea of that, right, is if I don't love anybody, then nobody can hurt me, right? That's a way that some people try to live, if you can call it living. To love is to make oneself vulnerable. And it's not easy. And it's not even always a good idea, honestly. We can't just be going around making ourselves vulnerable to everybody all the time. But when we love one another, when we open ourselves to the possibility that God's love really is as powerful as we say in this place, then maybe our lives really can change, and maybe our communities really can change, and maybe our whole world really can change. Jesus' new commandment wasn't really that new. Loving other people that was the beginning of the book, right? That wasn't just the second half of the book. But it was new in the way that, it wasn't really new. It was, even if it wasn't new, it was radical, and it had the potential to change the world, this commandment that we love one another. It's a command that we dare to make ourselves vulnerable. We wash feet, we allow our feet to be washed by others so that we can experience the holy power of God's love for us in an unexpected way. We make ourselves vulnerable in that ritual, in this ritual, so that we can learn how to trust in God and trust in other people and make ourselves vulnerable in the world. When we realize that this is how much God loves us, that God can find the beauty even beneath the worst parts of us, then we can truly follow Jesus, loving and serving God and our neighbor. Amen.